So, Srimad Bhagavatam Kanda 1, chapter 9, text 10 and 4. And it's all happening here in ISKCON Phoenix, Mauritius, right? Yutin Turagarajo Vidum Ravishwa
Yutin Turagarajo Vidum Ravishwa
Gacharagalita Smar Swamabhari Alankrita Shema
Gacharagalita Swamabhari
Mamanisita Sare Vibhidyamana
Mamanisita Sare Vibhidyamana
Tashi Vilatsa Kavases to Krishna Atma
Tashi Vilatsa Kavases to Krishna Atma.
And then we go to the translation of Prabhupada.
Yudhi
on the battlefield.
On the battlefield.
Turaga,
horses.
Rajaha,
dust.
Vidumra, turn an ashen color. Vishwak,
waving.
Kacha,
air.
Lulita,
scattered.
Shamabari,
aspiration.
Alankrita,
decorated with. Ashe,
onto the face.
Mama,
mine.
Nishita,
sharp.
Sare,
by the arrows. Vibhidyamana,
pierced by.
Kwashi,
in the skin.
Vilasat,
enjoying pleasure.
Kawase,
protecting armor.
As to. Let there be.
Krishna.
Unto Sri Krishna.
Atma.
Mind. So translation of Prabhupada is, Divine Grace is confounded child, Srila Bhajana Vinda Bhaktivedanta. Swami, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Very good. Srila Prabhupada jai. So it's good. Prabhupada is here, you know?
Yes.
Okay. So, I remember I had a dream of Prabhupada before he came to the temple. So, when he came,
he said, yes. He's the one whom I saw in the dream.
Baba directed him to come to the temple. He was an hunter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one devotee told me this story in Nigeria. One of the persons he was cultivating. So this guy, he went for hunting. So as his carriage is gone, he was aiming at the bird, and he had a voice said he should stop. From nowhere in the forest. So that was in the dream. So he had a voice saying he should stop. So he stopped. And then, the Prabhupada appeared to him and told him that this thing is doing, it's not befitting. He should go and find out devotees and have the association. That's how the guy became. He tried to trace a temple for months. And eventually he got information. So he visited the temple. So the very first day he came into the temple, he saw Prabhupada and said, he's the one I tell you. So Translation. On the battlefield where Sri Krishna attended Arjuna out of friendship, the flowing hair of Lord Krishna turned ashen due to the dust raised by the hoofs of the horses. And because of his labor, beads of sweat wetted his face. All these decorations, intensified by the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows, were enjoyed by him. Let my mind thus go on to Sri Krishna. Please respond correctly. On the battlefield, where Sri Krishna attended Arjuna, out of friendship. The flowing hair of Lord Krishna turned ashen due to the dust raised by the hoofs of the horses. And because of his labor, beads of sweat wetted his face. All these decorations, intensified by the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows, were enjoyed by him. Let my mind thus go unto Sri Krishna. Purport, the Lord is the... Have you repeated already? Have you repeated the English translation? The Lord is the absolute form of eternity, bliss, and what? Kishore, and what? Eternity, bliss, and what? The Lord is the absolute form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Bliss, eternity, bliss, and knowledge. We are also, the living entity is also characterized by eternity, bliss, and knowledge. So in a sense, we are having the same qualities as Krishna. But that does not make us what? As such, transcendental loving service to the Lord in one of the five principal relations, namely Santa, Dasya, Sakya, Vasalya, and Madhurya, etc. I mean, that is neutrality, servitorship, fraternity, filial affection, and conjugal love is graciously accepted by the Lord when offered to the Lord in genuine love and affection. In genuine love and affection. Sri Bhishma Dev is a great devotee of the Lord in the relation of what? Shivaras? Chivalry is a secondary rasa. What is the primary rasa of Bhishma Dev? Of Krishna. Any of the men, any of the Prabhus? If you don't know, I'll go to the Matujis, they will tell us. Why is Bhishma Dev's primary rasa? Someone should try?
I'd like to try it. Mm-hmm. To guess servitorship.
Chivalry is there. That was his secondary rasa. Practically all, a number of the Kshatriyas, virtually all the Kshatriyas of Lord Krishna, the words of Lord Krishna were Kshatriya. They have chivalry as secondary rasa. This Mandev cases. Typical one. And because on the right on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Bhishma almost threw off Arjuna off balance, Krishna could not bear it again. He jumped down, he broke his promise. just about to wheel his chakra on Bhishma Dev. He jumped down, carried the chakra, he wanted to, you know. So he said, all right, at least you've broken your promise. Good. Sri Bhishma Dev is a devotee of the Lord in relationship, in a relation of servitorship. Thus, his throwing of sharp arrows at the transcendental body of the Lord is as good as the worship of another devotee who throws soft roses upon him. Bhishma even throws arrows of Lord Krishna. It's not just a journey. Huh? Yes. According to the Prabhupada's purpose here. Thus, his throwing of sharp arrows at the transcendental body of the Lord is as good as worship of another devotee who throws soft roses upon him. And Krishna, it is mentioned in the main text, Krishna was sweating. Huh? His face was wet with sweat. And the whole of his, you know, his beautiful curly hair was covered with dust. Mud. Dust from the hoof prints. Because the horses on the battlefields, there was, you know, when horses are running, you see that there's a heavy dust, especially during the summer. Heavy dust is generated, especially when the horses are many. And you have any horses, can you count on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? So this form like a fog of dust on Krishna's head. But he was enjoying it and he was sweating. Bhishma was throwing arrows at him. Huh? So we should think of Bhishma threw arrows at Krishna, I will also do it. The relationship is different. It appears that Bhishma Dev is repenting the actions he committed against the person of the Lord. But factually, the Lord's body was not at all pained due to his transcendental existence. His body is not matter. Both he himself and his body are complete spiritual identity. Spirit is never pierced, burnt, dried, moistened, etc. This is vividly explained in the Bhagavad Gita. So also, it is stated in the Skanda Purana. It is said in the Skanda Purana, that spirit is always uncontaminated and indestructible. It cannot be disrest, nor can it be dried up. When Lord Vishnu in his incarnation appears before us, he seems to be like one of the conditioned souls, materially engaged, just to bewilder the asuras or the non-believers who are always allowed to kill the Lord, even from the very beginning of his appearance. Kansa wanted to kill Krishna. Ravana wanted to kill Rama. Because foolishly, they were unaware of the fact that the Lord is never killed, for the spirit is never annihilated. Therefore, Bhishma Dev's piercing of the body of Lord Krishna is a sort of bewildering problem for the non-devotee atheists. But those who are devotees or liberated souls are not bewildered. Bhishma Dev appreciated the all-merciful attitude of the Lord because he did not leave Arjuna alone, although he was disturbed by the sharpened arrows of Bhishma Dev, nor was he reluctant to come before Bhishma's deathbed, even though he was ill-treated by him on the battlefield. Bhishma's repentance and the Lord's merciful attitude are both unique in this picture. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, a great Acharya, and devotee in the humor of conjugal love with the Lord, remarks very saliently in this regard. He says that the wounds created on the body of the Lord By the sharpened arrows of Bhishmadev, we are as pleasing to the Lord as the biting of a fiancé who bites the Lord's body, directed by a strong sense of sex desire. Such biting by the opposite sex is never taken as a sign of enmity, even if there is a wound on the body. Therefore, the fighting as an exchange of transcendental pleasure between the Lord and his pure devotee, Sri Bhishmadev, was not at all mundane. Besides that, since the Lord's body and the Lord are identical, there was no possibility of wounds in the absolute body. The apparent wounds caused by the sharpened arrows are misleading to the common man, but one who has a little knowledge, a little absolute knowledge, can understand the transcendental exchange in the Chalbaros relation. The Lord was perfectly happy with the wounds caused by the sharpened arrows of Bhishmadev. The word Bibi Dhyama is significant because the Lord's skin is not different from the Lord. Because our skin is different from our soul, in our case, the word vibhidhyamana, or being brushed and cut, would have been quite suitable. Transcendental bliss is therefore. Yes, you see that. Go look at the feet. Transcendental bliss is of different varieties, and the variety of activities in the mundane world is but a perverted reflection of transcendental bliss. Because everything in the mundane world is qualitatively mundane, it is full of inebrieties. Whereas in the absolute realm, because everything is of the same absolute nature, there are varieties of enjoyment without inebriety. The Lord enjoyed the wounds created by his great devotee Bhishmadev, and because Bhishmadev is a devotee in the Chalbaros relation, he fixes upon his mind on Krishna in that wounded condition. Wow. Oh, again, to be honest, yeah, again, the Nasalaka, I have so many times here, it is my secret, you know, the Jaitan and all this stuff, So you're welcome again to this morning get together in Krishna consciousness. Coming together to share something, to hear something about Supreme Personality of God and his wonderful devotees. Here we hear in the passing away Bhishmadev on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was very powerful and defeated Arjuna, and Krishna broke his promise to come and save Arjuna. But not only that, here we are seeing that Bhishmadev directed even his arrows on Krishna. But it is not like Kamsa and Ravana who wanted to kill Krishna. That was, you know, Prabhupada says, dovetailment. So Bhishmadev was simply dovetailing his chivalry in Krishna's service. And Krishna was enjoying it. Imagine someone's body being pierced by arrows from supposedly enemy, and he's enjoying it. So this is called Lila. Huh? I mean, it's like you know, in theater arts, people take different positions and then they come on the stage to perform. So that is theater arts. This is a spiritual theater arts. All of these people you see, Bhishma, Dev, and who acted like an apparent enemy shooting arrows on Krishna, is a pure devotee of the Lord. Krishna comes into the material world, he wants to wrestle with his devotees. He wants to fight with his devotees. Because Krishna is used to sporting. Therefore, even when he comes to the material world, he does not give up that his nature. He used to sporting in Goloka Vrindavan. He goes into the forest, frolicking in the forest with his boyfriends. With his cowherd boyfriends. And when they are in the forest, all type of plays are brought into bear. Not only tend to the cows, but, you know, to release themselves from fatigue, they go into plays. Different type of plays. Sometimes dividing themselves into two groups, one headed by Lord Balaram, one headed by Lord Krishna, and then, you know, carrying some of the boys on their shoulder and, you know, competing in running. So, the same people, Krishna wants to come to this material world. He engages his devotees to come with him and perform different leelas. So even here, you find that Bhishma Dev, at the final stage, he was remembering Krishna being pierced with his arrows, but he was regretful. But, you know, Krishna enjoyed it. Krishna orchestrated it anyway. It was Krishna's orchestration that brought all of those into being. So, I mean, it's just like you find Krishna wanted to come, and then he has to get someone to fight with him and all these things. But who else could do that? His devotee. Then he caused Jaya Vijaya to be apparently offensive, to be caused by the Kumaras. And he had to come as demons. Okay? He had to come as demons. So, this is the position of the Lord. He likes sporting events. Huh? Sometimes we think that when you're a devotee, you don't have to do any sports. Because Krishna is a sports guy. He likes sports and sporting. So here we find that Bhishma Dev is about to pass away on a deathbed of arrows. But the video of his mind was playing back, you know, those wonderful experiences he had with the Lord. Yesterday, we hear him in the previous text, he was describing the clothes, the dhoti of the Lord, you know, how it was glittering. So here, the cinema of his mind, the video of his mind, of the past events, has now replayed the scenario where he was reflecting, he was seeing Krishna, being pierced with arrows, wounded, sweating, and the whole of his hair covered over with, you know, dust from the hoofprints of the horses. So Bhishma Dev was a little bit regretful about what he did, shooting arrows at the Lord, but the Lord was enjoying. So Prabhupada made a very clear point in the purport that Lord Krishna's body and his skin
Lord Krishna's soul and his skin are non-different. Krishna is absolute, so there's no question of Krishna's soul. Krishna is characterized by eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Sat, Shiv, Ananda. So there's no question of Krishna's soul or the inborn in Krishna. Like the Mayavadis, they tend to interpret some verses in the Bhagavad Gita. We are conditioned souls. Our bodies are different from our soul. Papa mentioned that in the Papa. The body of living entity is different from the soul. The skin of the living entity is different from his bones. The blood of the living entity is different from his bones. The material body of the living entity is different from his soul. It's different from his subtle body. The gross body, the gross elements are different from the subtle elements. And for Krishna, is all transcendent, is all spiritual. So this is a little bit complex thing for the non-devotees, very proper to understand. That this is a situation when something is absolute, it does not wither, it does not change. So the soul, like Krishna mentioned in the Gita, the soul cannot be dried, cannot be dried, cannot be destroyed. No chemical can destroy the soul. No weapon, even a ballistic weapon, cannot destroy the soul. Because a ballistic weapon is a material element, whereas the soul is all spiritual. And so material elements can only destroy material substances. And therefore, because Krishna is absolute, whether Bhishma throws arrows on him or whatever, an apparent piercing of his skin with Bhishma's arrows is just a theatrical scenario. It has no bearing with absolute reality. Because Krishna is absolute. And so, it's not amazing, therefore, that Krishna was simply accepting this offering from Bhishma Dev, just like some other devotee would offer a flower garland to him, garlands of roses, or, you know, throw flowers on him, rose flowers on him. A rose flower from one devotee and Bhishma Dev's arrows. Krishna is non-different. So people who are not devotees, it's very difficult for them to digest the absolute status of the Supreme Person. Because people get confused and they don't really understand that they cannot project their image into Krishna's bearing. Krishna calls them fools because Krishna is not a conditioned soul. And some people look at him like every other conditioned soul because he apparently has a body. He has two hands, he's walking, he's eating. It's pain being he's being chastised by the parents, being tied with a rope, he steals butter and all this type of things. And in Krishna's pastimes, he displayed his mischievousness as the absolute truth. I remember one time, Upananda's wife, Upananda is Krishna's uncle. So Upananda's wife, he caught Krishna one day stealing butter in her house. So he got him arrested. And Krishna was begging her, please, 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 don't take me to my mom. Please. The wife didn't mind it. You've been giving us so much of trouble. Today I caught you. Yeah. Your mother has always been defending you. I'm going to show her that.
to their culture. So although Krishna begged Upananda's wife, she didn't mind, so he submitted. So he wrapped him over his head and then, you know, took him to Mother Yasoda. Immediately, she went to Mother Yasoda's dharma. She said, "Hey, I brought a boy. Today I caught him. He's here. You keep defending your boy. Today I caught him. I brought him here to show you." So Mother Yasoda came out and said, "So, yeah, where is he?" So Upananda's wife unwrapped, removed the cloth from Krishna's face. And that was her husband himself. Her husband himself was Upananda. So he said, "Come, what's going on? You said my boy is going to see the water. You brought him. Your husband stole your water and you said, 'This is my boy.' This is your husband. This is Upananda." So she was bewildered. She couldn't really know what to do. She was disappointed. So she just went back with the purported husband. So as they were going back, so Krishna turned again to Krishna, changed again to Krishna. And Krishna told her that, "I told you, I was begging you, leave me alone. You refused. So this is how you get. This is the result of not cooperating with me. You mess up yourself." So this is Krishna. So if you want to steal, sometimes people say, can I steal, you know, as a devotee, can I steal and, you know, bring everything to Krishna? What is your intention of stealing? If you steal, what's your intention? You want to get some fame that, "Yes, I stole this amount of money and I gave it all to Krishna. See, I'm very powerful. I stole." A bad intention. Intention imbued with fame, distinction, and adoration. These are subtle things that, you know, people want to do. Want to do it in this way, want to do it in that way for Krishna. But at the back of our minds, we're thinking, "Wow, just see. I'm so powerful. I did this for Krishna. Can you do it?" Because, you know, one acharya, he went to rob to be able to build some temple, and sometimes some devotees also think that I can also go rob to, you know, to do some service, but we should not imitate. Yeah, there's no need to imitate. We should do our prescribed duties. And leave the rest to Krishna. So the point here is that Papa mentioned significant issues in the purport here. He was referring to the case of Krishna being haunted by cancer. Ravana also haunted Lord Ram, tried to kill Lord Ram, kidnap his consort, and wanted to usurp Ram's position, not only taking his wife, wanted to see that Ram was killed. So he went to the battlefield, he went to battle with Ram. They encountered each other in the battlefield. But again, we find what was the result? Ravana was annihilated. What does that mean to us? Ravana was annihilated. What does that mean to us? So, if we try to enjoy Krishna's resources, whether grossly or subtly, we will be defeated. Moga sha, moga kamano, will be defeated. Moga jnana, it is done. So, Krishna always remains a winner. People want to win. If we want to be winners, align with Krishna. But we should know, we should figure out when the mercy comes. Huh? If you are begging Krishna for some mercy, and then Krishna presents it, it may not bring the mercy in the direction we expected. We are here praying, Krishna, we want this. We're expecting it on through this door. But he may come from the back door to present it. It's up for us to identify this is Krishna's mercy. We should get it. He may even deput a hunter, a wretched person, to come and give us the blessing that we are asking from him. And then we just look at the person, his external feature. This is a formidable hunter. I can take this from go. I can. This is untouchable. I can't talk. We should look at the essence. What did he bring? Is it what we are looking for? If it's what we are looking for, we should take it from him and forget about his body. We should forget about his profession. Did he bring what we are asking for? We should take it. Why not?
I remember one story. There was this flood, and this gentleman was offered several avenues to be relieved from that situation. But he was always praying, my God is there, he's going to help me. So the flood was building up. The place used to be like a little bit of a mountain where he was standing. Flood was blowing, building up. Helicopters came by, threw safety ropes for him to climb. And then said himself, he said, no, he was praying. Perhaps he wanted Vishnu himself to come and pick him on his Garuda. So this is the problem. We're begging for some mercy. We should identify the essence. Whomever that brings it, we should get it. So this very person, he was still begging until he got flooded, because the flood blew up until he got covered up. So he died. And then he was accusing the Lord that, he was accusing the Vishnu that I was begging you, praying to you all this while to be saved. He never saved me. Why? Why? He never saved me. Vishnu said, but I even sent airplane to you to save you. But you refuse to take. You refuse to be saved. What else can I do? Huh? What else can I do? So, yeah, we have to. When we are praying to Krishna, we should be ready to accept the blessings he is going to send to us. Even if it comes through our enemy, we should take it. We should take it. Even if it comes from somebody we don't like, we should take it. We should not just pinpoint, it has to come through this way. Then, yes, it's from Krishna. Yeah. Think about, you have a project here. You're asking Radha Gorakhananda to help you with your temple. Radha Gorakhananda may even send somebody whom you don't like to come and say, can I build this temple for you? And he say, we don't want your money, get out from here. Yeah, it happens. You pray every day to the Lord, he may send somebody that not your friend. Somebody you don't like his name to come up at all in the history of ISKCON, Mauritius. I'm going to talk of being the one who has to get that honor that, he built a temple. So you can say, hey, that's a hurry. We don't want your money. Go away with your money.
Yeah. It wasn't that way.
Krishna is funny. Krishna is a funny person. We cannot figure out Krishna's plans. Forget it. Don't try to figure out Krishna's plans. You may do that for billions of births. No way. So, you have to see how we are. Prabhupada says utility is the principle. That is not a simple language. It's deep. Deep, very expansive also. It's deep as a real depth, and also the expansion is unlimited. Utility is the principle. So, here in this text, Bhishma Devi is reflecting a wonderful appearance of Lord Krishna in his he was also reflecting. He got focused on this very pastime because himself is a Kshatriya. So he is appreciating Krishna's chivalrous situation when he pierced him with arrows and Krishna was just sweating and enjoying it. We don't enjoy being hurt by anyone. In Vrindavan, Krishna's devotees could even insult him. We don't want to be insulted by anyone. Because we are not Krishna. Because we are not pure devotees. And we should not pretend about it. Don't pray for troubles to come your way because you're not Mother Kunti. We should pray for blessings. Don't pray for trouble. So, why did Krishna have to be on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Why? Why? Because of Arjuna. He went there to serve Arjuna. And this is a strange scenario. That the Lord is even ready to sacrifice his own comfort for his devotee. He's ready to sacrifice his convenience for his devotee. Are we ready to sacrifice our comfort and our convenience for the devotees? Or we want everyone else to sacrifice their convenience for us? To sacrifice their comfort for us? This is the situation. So in the text here, it's mentioned, on the battlefield, where Sri Krishna attended Arjuna out of friendship. A friend in need is a friend indeed. You will know this person is your friend. Until when you have problems. When you're in trouble, then you know who is your friend. When you don't have problem, forget. You don't have you people hang around you, hover around you. Get into some trouble before, then you know who is your friend. Get into small trouble, then you know who is your friend. So Krishna is a friend indeed, a friend indeed. Arjuna was in trouble, he went with him. Not only did he go with him, he was attacked. Yeah, arrows. Are we ready to suffer for our friends? Are we ready to suffer for our friends? Krishna is Arjuna's friend. Are we ready to suffer for our friends? You see, our scripture is very deep. We can take it deep, or we can take it very peripheral surface. We can repeat it. And I call that simply paratology. Paros. Paros to repeat. Parrot may not understand why it's repeating. He just hears it. He has that ability, that capacity to repeat whatever the parrot hears. Doesn't mean that the parrot has so much of high intelligent quotient. The parrot inherently has that ability. I mean, like the ants. If you put anything sugary somewhere, you know, I put this, I offered some things and then I came to class, some banana. Because I was rushing to camp, I didn't know who they offered. Before I could go, the ants have taken over the whole place, right on my altar. So the ants are also, they are mystics. Once there is some sugary scent, they trace it very fast. You don't have to ring a bell and then you call them over. Oh yes. So everyone is endowed with some potentials. We should look at the potentials that people have and engage them accordingly. Then there will be high productivity. There will be high quality input. There will be high results. If we want to do the things the way we want, we like to do it, without caring for even professional advice, we can pray to Krishna for years, and Krishna sends the help through somebody, and we don't identify the help, and we reject the help. Just like the devotee who was praying, Lord Vishnu's devotee was praying to him, and then Lord Vishnu sent an airplane to save him from the flood. He was waiting for Garuda. Lord Vishnu to come on Garuda to pick him up. He can never know how Krishna comes with the help. We should watch out. We should watch out the essence. What do we want? And just check out where it comes and grab it. It doesn't mean whether it comes from a hunter. We should not be after the bodies. Huh? We should not be after the personality. We should be after the essence. People have different personalities. We should see people from a special perspective. In that way, we can relate very nicely with these wonderful pastimes, like Krishna being shot with arrows, pierced with arrows by Bhishma Dev. It doesn't mean that Bhishma Dev has ceased to be Krishna's friend. It doesn't mean that. If someone does something we don't like, he is our eternal enemy. Certain of him. He has not to be like that. If we are trying to be devotees, we should see how we are helping each other to grow in the devotion. We should be in a position to help, even sacrifice our time. And all of this begins with your family, you know? All of these thoughts, all of this philosophy begins with the family. You cannot be a good man serving the guru, the sannyasis who come, you're serving the vinyasa, then you're very abusive to your wife and your children at home. Emotionally abusive. Or physically abusive. Or financially abusive. It doesn't work like that. You're not giving the support that they need. So you're not sacrificing your convenience. This is the point. Krishna, on the battlefield, we have Sri Krishna attending Arjuna out of friendship. He went there, attended to Arjuna's needs, even became Arjuna's charioteer. Why? Because of friendship. How many of us will go into battlefield without friends? Once you have a problem, you are dumped. No, no, no. Oh, it's not my friend. Oh, it's not my brother. No, 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 it's not my brother. People reject even their blood relations because they are into small trouble. They reject them. Krishna did not. He followed Arjuna to the battlefield. He became a charioteer of Arjuna. There are so many things we can learn from any scenario in the world. So let us go on today, reflecting on Bhishma's situation. That he was about to feed the body, but he was appreciating how Krishna is so generous, so friendly, so helpful, so self-sacrificial. If we love someone, we have to be self-sacrificial. This is love. Krishna is self-sacrificial. So are there some comments or questions on this point? We don't want to take it too much today. And that will go today. Any comments or questions? I read the main text again on the battlefield where Sri Krishna attended Arjuna out of friendship. The flowing air of Lord Krishna turned shen due to the dust raised by the hooves of the horses. And because of his labor, beads of sweat wetted his face. Krishna was sweating on the battlefield. He went there not to enjoy, to help his friend. And because of his labor, beads of sweat wetted his face. He was working so hard for his friend. Because of his labor, he worked so hard for his friend Arjuna. All his decorations intensified by the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows. Krishna was pierced with sharp arrows. In the process of trying to help his friend, he was pierced with sharp arrows from General Bhishma Dev. It's my best friend, it's not a joke. It's my beloved, it's not a joke. It's my son, it's not a joke. It's my daughter, it's not a joke. We have to be self-sacrificial. Any comments or questions? Yes, listen.
Maharaj, in the beginning, when you were glorifying Srila Prabhupada, you asked and you mentioned, is Prabhupada here? That's true, very true. So my question is, that when we enter the temple room and pay obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, how can we perceive the presence of Srila Prabhupada?
That's a nice point. You know, what we have in, whether it's in transcendental knowledge or mundane knowledge, we have theory and practice. Theory gives you the principle. The principle is that the Murti is not different from the personality. It's just like Krishna on the altar, Sisudara Golukananda. Someone may come, I tell you, someone may come into this temple. I will come into this temple, I will not see Radha Golukananda. You believe that? I tell you a story. I don't want to mention the country. But there was a pujari. So one day, he went to dress the deity. Radha Samasundar, the presiding deity is Radha Samasundar. So he was one of the pujaris who dressed Radha Samasundar. So he went there, and the other pujaris were already busy. One of them was beating Gora Nitai, one of them was attending to Jagannath Baladeva Subhadra. So when he went to the altar, he didn't see the deities. So he was asking the other pujari that, who moved Radha Samasundar? Where is Radha Samasundar? So the other pujaris, they looked at him, and then he was still asking. So they couldn't contain themselves, they burst into laughter. They said, see, Radha Samasundar is there on the altar. He looked, he couldn't find him. Pujari. So guess what has happened? What he did, that Krishna concealed himself from. So, a Prabhupada is there. And the sastras stipulate that each time we meet our spiritual master, or the grand spiritual master, for instance, your Prabhupada is here. I didn't find anywhere in the sastra. I've not read, maybe because I've not read too much, but I've not found anywhere in the sastra where it says obeisance. It means you touch the floor and put it on your head. That's what obeisance is.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely it is not.
That's not obeisance. So, and obeisance is to elders. I know in Nigeria, in the Yoruba land, in the north and the mid and the west of Nigeria, every morning the child, whether he's 35 years old, if he's living with the parents, he goes to pay obeisances to the parents, mother and father. In Yoruba, they even pay full dandavat. So it's not only a very culture. I've seen that. And so you can pretend not to see your parents and not pay obeisances. But if you're a visionary, if you have the vision and you see your parents and you greet them by paying obeisances, they'll be pleased with you. Because that is the culture. If you don't do that, it means something is wrong with you. This boy is being disrespectful. His consciousness is polluted. So we find people who are in our movement. Perhaps we have not taught them properly, but they enter the movement. See, this is the tradition. Each time you come into the temple and Prabhupada is here, you have to pay obeisance. Each time you meet your spiritual master and you're leaving, even if it's 100 times, you are supposed to pay obeisances to your spiritual master. So here, Prabhupada is here as a grand spiritual master. We are supposed to pay obeisance to Prabhupada when we come into the temple hall. And if we are living, again, we have to pay obeisance. If we can't pay full dandavat, but at least head should touch, not hand touching the floor and putting it on our head. Oh, yeah. If we are putting the hand and putting our head, means that, you know, we are not recognizing that Prabhupada is even there. Because, just like I mentioned, even in Yoruba land, the kids, they pay obeisances with their full body to the parents, recognizing the presence of the parents. You gave birth to me. You gave me knowledge. You gave me education. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Baba. Thank you, ma'am. This is the culture. So here in the Vedic system, it's the same thing. We have to recognize that our father is there. And even for the grandfather, the number of us are not disciples of Papa. Even for the grandfather is even more merciful to the child than the real parents. The parents are very strict. The grandma, the grandpa, they're very mellow. Because sometimes they can spoil the child if you leave them in their care. But at least the parents are there, and the grandparents also are there. The grandparents are more caring than the actual parents. They are more merciful, they are more loving. And so our grand spiritual master is here, and if we don't recognize that he's here, we will not even pay obeisance. Just like the child in the house does not even greet the parent. So will child's parents be very pleasing to the child? No. Either the child just denying the fact that the parents are his parents, and he has to be socially responsible, culturally responsible, or he just outrightly stubborn, or outrightly a nonsense person. So, how do we know that Prabhupada is here? When we hear stories about Prabhupada, how even it's not on the planet, it's appearing to people, making more devotees. It's not on the planet, he's still making more devotees. And we have heard from the scriptures that the Murti is not different from the spiritual master. Even the picture, when we talk of the Murti, picture of the spiritual master is not different from the spiritual master.
So from the scriptures that we have had this theoretical information, we should apply it in our lives. We see the spiritual master, we should read. No, I read from the scriptures, the motive is not different from Prabhupada. And if we have that mindset, Prabhupada will reciprocate. Krishna doesn't force anybody, the guru doesn't force anybody. So the principle is, we have to remember, ye yatama prapadyante tamstataya prachanya. It's a theoretical concept. We have to apply that. Krishna reciprocates. The guru reciprocates according to our mindset, according to how we are serving him. So it's a simple thing. I can just see somebody and say, and you greet me and then I pretend not to know you. So I'm a good guy? No, of course. So here is Prabhupada. If you pray not to see him, what else can you do? But if we really recognize that this is Prabhupada and we act accordingly, he will reciprocate. He will reciprocate. Some of us, see, I have dreamt of Prabhupada more than I dreamt of my spiritual master. I never met Prabhupada. Each time I run into problems, say big health things and all this, his Prabhupada will appear to me. So we should go a little bit deeper, a little deeper in our connection effort. When we are praying, when we come to pay things to pray, we should not just pray mechanically. Boom, and then we'll get up. I mean, it's like a formality. Pay the business, it's a finish. Huh? Yes, so we should be conscientious. We should be conscious. We do the things conscientiously. We should be conscious of what we are doing. And we have all of the theoretical knowledge. We should reflect on the theoretical information that we have learned from the Vedic scriptures and apply that. It's a matter of application. If you have heard, we have heard, Mama Evamso Jiva Loki. Krishna said, everyone is my part and parcel. And then you wonder, how am I going to realize this? Start treating everybody like part and parcel of Krishna, and you realize it. Treat your wife like the way you will honor and protect your mom. And you realize that Krishna, everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. So this is the situation. Motive is there. We have heard the motive is not different from the personality, spiritual personality. So we should act in that way. Then we'll get the reciprocation.
Yeah. Wonderfully explained, Maharaj.
Thank you very much.
I have another question.
Yes,
time
please.
For me.
Right.
We have the intent of Bhishma or other, when Mother Draupadi was being destroyed by Dushasan, and all the assembled correct personalities were there, including Bhishma Dev, and also before that, after that, Mother, when there was a battle of Kurukshetra, I presume, subject to correction from Your Holiness, that Bhishma Dev knew that Duryodhan was wrong, completely wrong. But still he sided on his side. And on the other aspect, he did not intervene to stop
disrobing of
or being destroyed.
Question is why?
Yes.
This is explained. Because you know on this Bhishma Dev's bed of arrows, when he was given the sermon on leadership, so Draupadi challenged him. Hey, you're talking all this about big philosophy about leadership? You were there in the assembly hall when I was being derobed. You didn't have all this knowledge? What's wrong with you? You're talking all these things? So Bhishma Dev explained. This is another point, another good point. A woman challenging him, a general Bhishma Dev, ordinary woman challenging him, say, come on, keep quiet there, you just talking nonsense. You were there when I was bending the rope, is it not the position of the Kshatriya to protect women and children? What did you do? You have all this big information with you. You need to apply it. Bhishma Dev explained. He didn't get angry and say, hey, you nonsense woman, you challenging me?
He explained. In other words, he accepted that Drupadi's chastisement was correct. I mean, like Rupa Goswami, he told Mirabai that, yes, you're right. Because Mirabai said that, ha, because you said that you cannot give me darshan because I'm a woman? I thought everybody is a Prakriti. And it's only Krishna who is a Purusha. You said you cannot give me darshan because I'm a woman? Rupa Goswami said, huh? You're right. You're correct. He didn't get angry with her. Hey, I'm a Acharya. You're just an ordinary woman. You just need God to correct me. So Bhishma Devi said, he responded. He said, you know what? That time, when that incident took place in the assembly, yes, I was there. I saw it. I didn't do anything. I was terribly polluted. My consciousness was polluted from Duryodhana's food. Duryodhana was feeding me with all those sinful energy, so I got polluted. You know the reason why Prabhupada emphasized his devotee should not eat outside. If even his cheese pizza outside, we should not eat it. Especially grain products, we should never eat. Because the person who prepares the food, the energy of that person goes into the food. And if we are eating, then we are imbibing that type of energy. So Bhishma Dev just gave explanation supporting that idea that the food he was eating, which was made available through Drodan's resources, was the cause of his incompetency to be able to stand up to defend his status as a Kshatriya, who is supposed to be a protector of women and children. When someone is feeding you, he's gradually buying you over. And I have had this experience. The way you want to make your mother or your grandmother really get mad with you is tell them, hey mommy, hey grandma, I'm not eating today. You did this to me. I'm angry. I'm not eating. You see their fury. You see their fury. Even the most cold grandma, cold-headed, if she doesn't raise her lamp, she will call your father. Quick. This is what this boy is doing. This is what this girl is doing. He refuses to eat. That is so painful. Why? Because when they are cooking, they infuse their love in the food. They're meditating on the family. They're meditating with love for the family. So by the wife having to cook palatable dishes, and everybody eats, that is a bond that is created in the family. So one way to easily break the family is the husband should not eat in the house. He should just go and eat in the butcher shop every day. And very soon, something will happen. So food is a powerful weapon. It can destroy a man. It can destroy anybody. It can also bring consolidated love in the family if it is prepared by the right person who is having genuine concern for the family, genuine concern for the community. And when people eat it, they will also be participants in that general cause for love and elevation of the family. This is one reason why in Western cultures, families break apart very fast. Whereas people from Indian cultural background, and I saw this even in Nigeria when I was still in Africa preaching, that the Indians, when they are even going to the office, their wives will prepare their lunch bag. After they eat in the morning, when they're going to the office, the wives will prepare their lunch bag, put it inside the car. They won't eat outside. I've seen that. I saw that even in the gym. They won't eat outside. So the love remains in the family. If you're eating outside every day, the food might be very sweet. So you're thinking about the person who cooked that food. So your love becomes diverted. It's going outside. And for a young man, if the person who's cooking the food is very, if the person for instance is a woman who is very beautiful, maybe thinking, oh, I wish she should be my wife to cook for me every day. And believe it or not, this is how some of the families get tinted with fracture. They get zapped outside. If a woman wants to really put the husband in her pocket, she'll make nice palatable dishes, offer it to Krishna. The man is even in the office will be thinking, oh, when should I go back to the house soon? Because I need to see my wife. Oh yeah. Food works wonders. Okay. If someone eats very nice dishes, he'll be smiling and he'll be talking sweet things. He'll be talking sweet things, yeah? So the person who is cooking has to have good consciousness. And Drodian is not such a person. So although he was not directly cooking, then because he was the one sponsoring it, Bhishma Dev imbibed that Duryodhan bhava. It's a nice point you raised, but this is the explanation.
I have a very pertinent point.
Okay.
Practical, on the practical side for us devotees,
uh-huh.
that the one who is cooking, the devotee who is cooking, preparing, so how should he or she prepare herself or himself prior to cooking?
Okay. He has to be clean or she has to be clean. And not only that, if he starts cooking, he should not do anything else. He should not talk prajapa. She should not talk prajapa. He should not talk prajapa. He should not even drink water. But I know in the kitchen, Prabhupada was in the kitchen with some of his early disciples. And then I think one of the ladies said she wanted to go and drink some water. She was thirsty. So she went to do that. And then she came back and Prabhupada said, go and wash your hand. Ordinary water to drink. Prabhupada said, all right, go wash your hand. So, I mean, the service of Krishna. I mean, it's like you're on the telephone with somebody. You don't want to do any other thing until you finish the telephone talk, telephone conversation. Cooking is service of Krishna. And that is the powerhouse. The person who is cooking. You know why? In some temples, they have a standard that it's all the brahmanas who should cook. Because supposedly, the brahmanas should have higher consciousness. In that way, they are able to raise the consciousness of the people. And of course, the brahmanas will always be thinking about Krishna when they are cooking. And also a scenario when Prabhupada went to see one of his godbrothers with some of the Western disciples in India. And so, he's a paramahansa. So when they went to his ashram, so he finished cooking, and then when he came, the Western disciples, the early disciples, new five disciples, they are accustomed to the process of cooking, offer on the altar, offer to the spiritual master, then is the prasadam is shared. But then when they went to see that Prabhupada's godbrother, so when he finished cooking, he just came and he started serving Prabhupada and his disciples. So these Western disciples, they were a little bit, what's going on? His food was not offered. We never saw him go to offer. He just finished cooking and he started. But then they saw Prabhupada eating. So they also started eating. But after the whole festival, one of them asked Prabhupada, why is that? Your godbrother? He didn't offer it. He didn't offer the burger. So Prabhupada explained to them that he's a Paramahamsa. Right from the period he was going, to the market to buy the vegetables and to buy the grains, he is meditating on Krishna, he's offering everything. So when he finishes, it's just an accomplishment. I mean, the mind is very powerful. Like we heard about the South Indian Brahmin who saw the need to make some quick rice, or sweet rice for his deity. And he was just meditating, you know, about his whole cooking and all this stuff. So he has finished cooking the sweet rice mentally, and then he was wondering that it might be too hot to serve the Lord. Now I don't have a deep freezer to put. And so he thought it might be too hot. So mentally he put his hand inside the sweet rice to see whether it's really too hot to offer to the Lord. And he got burned. Physically he got burned. This is the power of the mind. So yeah. The standard for cooking, we have to follow the standard that Prabhupada set for us. People cooking for others to eat, they have to have proper consciousness so that will facilitate the devotional growth of those who will eat it. Ideally, if we have senior devotees, like on Sunday feast, we should engage people, because on Sunday, a number of people who are not devotees are coming, so for us to have better impact on the minds of people to have their influence, we could get people to know properly what to do, what their mindset should be, and perhaps senior people should be there to either cook or to direct those who are helping with the cooking. Because if we don't get proper people to cook, it could cause a devastation in the yatra, in the community. If people are not following the regulatory principles, we should not allow them to cook. It doesn't matter whether they have been devotees for 40 years.
To enhance that proper consciousness before cooking, what Maharaj would say about chanting around before?
If that is possible, that would have been the ideal thing. The whole idea of having to wake up at 3 o'clock is to make sure that before Mangalarati, one has chanted like half his rounds. That's the whole idea of waking up at 3 o'clock. The whole idea of going to bed at 9 o'clock to be able to wake up at 3 o'clock is that one is able to chant some rounds before Mangalarati. And after Mangalarati, just a few rounds left. So one is easily done with that, and then can go to focus on the service that he or she has to do without any anxiety. I mean, it's like someone has to go out on Sankirtan, but it's a very demanding service. It can purify you very, it could expedite the purification so rapidly, but the same Sankirtan can cause a fall down if the person does not it's not highly regulated to wake up on time to chant before going out. If he has to struggle with the 16 rounds outside, or come back in the evening to chant the 16 rounds, it's a little bit dangerous. Also, one has to be a pujari, and pujari work is a very delicate service. I remember when I joined and I was a pujari, I mean, I had to wake up so early, because I had to go to the altar at 4 o'clock to wake the deities, and from that time till after class, till I go out for Sankirtan, no time. So what do you do? And the pujaris, in those days, it's not that you're a pujari, so you stay behind. Huh? You go to the altar at 4 o'clock, you go to the altar at 4 o'clock to wake the deities, after that, Mangalarati, offer offering, then Mangalarati, you do all of that, and then you bathe the deities. So once you go into at 4 o'clock, no going out till maybe prasadam time. And then it's getting close to Guru Puja, then you rush out to go and fetch some flowers for offering. It's not that someone has to go and bring you flowers for offering. You will have to go. So if you don't manage your time, pujari work can make you sink. Of course, now there are so many, you know, avenues for, there's so much of the service are so much divided that one person does small thing, one person does this small thing, one person does this small thing. When we're there, you do your pujari work, 4 o'clock go to the altar. You do offering, everything else. In other words, when you go at 4 o'clock, you don't go out until after the boga offering in the morning. You don't have any chance. You tell me where you're going to, and you have to go out on Sankirtan after class, after Prasadam in the morning. And you come back 5 o'clock.
Okay.
You come back 5 o'clock. So if you survive, you can be a hero anywhere in the world. If you survive, you can be a hero anywhere in the world. This is the training that we received. It was intense, but it helped us to become stabilized. So, the point is, we have to be regulated. Do our service on time. At least, to be able to do our chanting before we go on, we go out. This life, you can be out there. And I had a bizarre mentality in those days. I was thinking, hey, I have to do all of my chanting before I go out. Because I could be run down by a car, I could be run down by a stray bullet anytime. So before I go out, I'm ready to die, okay? We're not praying for the worst, but we are ready for the worst. It's a bizarre mentality, but those who don't even prepare like that, they die. So better to prepare like that, and when you die, so then you know. Anyway, I'll prepare for it anyway. So
very good point, man.
Yeah. So we should try to see that we are becoming very regulated and manage our time properly.
Mm.
So that, and it doesn't mean someone who is not living in a temple has to just be to relax and, you know, you come. If you come back after your work to come and do your japa in the night, you are doing your duty, huh? But you don't get so much of high profile benefit.
Mm.
Yeah, because the times that we have to do particular things, you know, is important. I mean, it's like, it's time for class, and then someone who else is washing his dhoti or is washing his sari. Huh? So, there's time to do, all of this though. It's time to eat, someone else is sleeping. It's time to sleep, someone else is eating. So, I mean, if we do the things completely, we have our own schedule, and it's not even favorable for our spiritual development. It's not good. So we have to prepare ourselves in such a way that we are happy to do, to accept, execute what Prabhupada has given to us. And we'll be happy. And before, this brings a reminder about, you know, the timing. So there was this young girl in South Africa, so her father had requested her to wait for me for spiritual connection. So she's at that time she was in final year in high school, and so she wrote me a mail saying, "Maharaj, I'm chanting my rounds every day. Why is it that I get so much irritated by very little things?" But before she told me that, the senior sister had told me she gets the girl is becoming too irritated in the house. The father had told me she gets irritated by very little things. So when she wrote me that, I already know about it. So I said, "Okay, you are chanting and this is still happening?" She said, "Yes." I said, "What time you chant?" She told me the time, when she comes back from school, in the evening, in the night. I said, "What time you go to bed?" She said, 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. I said, "What time you wake up?" 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock. I said, "So you're doing a japa, but everything about your schedule is completely misfit. Everything about your schedule is a misfit. So can you do one thing? You are asking a question. You're ready to take advice?" She said, "Yes." I said, "All right." When I calculated the number of hours she sleeps every night, it's just about 6 hours. I said, "You're very austere. So go to bed at 9 o'clock, wake up at 3. Because you are sleeping 6 hours right now. You sleep at 2 o'clock, then you wake up at 8 o'clock. So I said, "Change it." I said, "Do this, and then
Chant in the morning before you go to school, not when you come back in the night. So I gave her all of the directives that are supposed to give her some leverage. I said, so do this for 2 weeks and you get back to me. Give me a report about what is happening with your irritation. Not even up to 7 days, she wrote back to me. I said, 2 weeks. Not up to 7 days, she wrote back to me. She said, guess what she said? She said, she doesn't have irritation anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the point is, you're doing it, you're doing the job, but you're doing it at the wrong time. In the night, so much of sinful activity is going on. The energies in display, they are not favorable to devotional culture. So we might be doing a particular service or even whatever, but we are doing it at the wrong time. We will find that we just end up blaming Krishna, that maybe Krishna is not helping us. We should discuss with some other senior people and see how best we could be helped. This is why we need, Rupa Goswami recommends that we should have confidence. People who can share our joy and our challenges. People who can help us. People who can give us emotional support, spiritual support. So in that way, the devotional service could be easy to be able to, you know, execute. So thank you very much for your being around. You have a question? All right.
All right. Like, we are the follower of the Vedic. We are the follower of the Vedic culture. We are the follower of the Vedic culture. Like Bhagavatam is instructing us so many, giving so many instructions. And so, like following the instruction of Bhagavatam, like what we are preaching, what Bhagavatam is telling us in practical, we are not putting it in action. Like our society also is like this. There's so many points, like you were speaking on how to prepare the food, and we have like SCON, temple, the shop in the temple. The food is not cooked by the devotee. And all the devotees are taking the food and eating.
That's dangerous for the purpose for which the restaurant or the food for life is designated. Because the idea is that the number of people will not come to sit down in the back of class. But if we distribute prasadam to people, they get purified. A number of us become attracted to the movement, to ISKCON, to more align with teaching the Prabhupada through prasadam. We came to the temple, devotees are very friendly, they give us nice prasadam on Sunday, nice dishes. So then the next Sunday we are planning to come again. And so in that way, that is how a number of people became devotees, because they get attracted to the prasadam. Because the prasadam is prepared by people who are following the standard, then, you know, they get influenced very easily. They get purified very fast. And if you are making a restaurant for the purpose of making money, that is also good, but it's not the best. The idea behind is to get people to become purified by giving them prasadam. We can make very qualitative things, but it should be the persons who are cooking to be offered. We should get people who are following the principles, and then that will have a greater impact on those who eat. Yeah. If you are just making it like a traditional restaurant out there, there are so many vegetarian restaurants in America. Veganism is very popular, but, you know, a vegan does not necessarily mean that he's a devotee. He is performing some austerity, or she is performing some austerity by abstaining from, you know, meat eating and all this stuff, violence,
it in a better balance. But that is not to say that the person is a devotee. The cow is also a vegetarian. Cow. Huh? So what? Being a vegetarian means what? It just an elevated material status. But devotees are not vegetarians. They're Krishnatarians. So we have to use that principle of being a Krishna, a Krishnatarian or Krishnarianism, or whatever. Some people call it prasadatarians or whatever. The intent is to give Krishna's mercy to people. Huh? Krishna says in the Gita, Patram Puspam Phalantriyam, Yome Bhakti, Yome Bhakti. The offering should be done with love and devotion. In the Prabhupada mentions, this is first class service. Service done by pure devotees. Love and devotion what Krishna wants. So someone cooking, even food for distribution, should be done by someone who is following the principles, someone who is chanting. I know the home where I stay in upstate New York in America, the lady, she distributes food. And, you know, in that house they have, temple hall is almost this hall. It's a private home. Okay. They have big Jagannath deities, big Radha Sama Sunda and Sadhpuja and Gauranga. So the lady, she is very much interested in preaching. So she organizes Sabbatians, she organizes even Ratra Yatra in the Bronx. She organizes Food for Life. And she goes out. She has so much of connections to be able to just, you know, give out Krishna's mercy. And people get in place. Very powerful. So if we are following the standard and we cook and distribute that food to other people, the people will also become influenced positively. Yeah, but then if we are not following, then it's a problem. Or we get people who are not following to cook and offer to Krishna. Huh? We don't do that in temples. We don't employ people to come and cook something that will be to be a pujari cooks. Huh? In some temples, they get people, they pay people to come and people who are not even chanting to cook. But it's not a first class standard. Huh? So we have to hear our efforts towards making devotees. And how do we make devotees? What is the easiest thing to do? The easiest way to make devotees is to preach. And the easiest way to preach is to go out into the streets to disciple Krishna's holy names. It's just simple. Someone cannot say, oh, I don't have the ability to preach. You don't have legs to go into the street and do Harinam? That's what Lord Chaitanya did. He made devotees. Prabhupada, he went to Mecca. He went to the street to disciple Krishna's holy names. He went to Thompson Square Park himself alone to chant, and he brought so many devotees back. We like to do so many sophisticated things and forget the basic things. Why? We like to make things very complex. Why? This is the nature of conditioned life. We don't like simple things. We like to create difficulties for ourselves. Yeah, so if we want people to join, we should give them prasada, not bhoga. We should give them prasada. We should invest our resources in making nice on the feast. Even if the prasada is very small, we should be palatable, we should be nice. And when people come, they would like to come again. You see, this movement was founded based on trust in Krishna. And Prabhupada went to America, trusting in the words of his spiritual master. He didn't go to America with billions of dollars or billions of rupees, nothing. He established a worldwide movement, faith in the words of his spiritual master, faith in Krishna. So some simple things have been given to us, we should not water it down. We should not pervert it. Distribute Prabhupada said, we should distribute prasada. What is prasadam? Food that is of, that is made, cooked by a devotee and offered to Krishna. That's prasadam. Do we allow people to cook outside and offer that to our deities as bhoga offering? Rather, I see some ladies come here in the afternoon, and then they say they are preparing, they have come for bhoga arti. They are all, it's in our temple. Some devotees are even living outside. They come, you see them in the afternoon, they have come, or sometimes in the morning, they have come on weekends in the morning, they have come. They say they have to cook for the deities that morning. People who are Chinese 16 now, people who are Brahmins. They leave their busy schedule, they come in the morning to cook for the Lordship. Some of them, after cooking, they will go to the altar personally to do the offering because they're Brahmins. And so it's the same mindset that we should engage people who are following. When people are following, do the cooking, that we want to distribute the food, the people eat it will have a greater positive impact. What if we don't have the people to do that? Then we can employ people, and there'll be a lot of delay in achieving the goal. Our goal is to get devotees, to make devotees. And because we're not meeting up the standard, then it becomes difficult also to have devotees. Yeah. Nice point to read. Yes. Sometimes we forget the goal. The goal is to make the world Krishna conscious. It's not just to make money. All right. I think we can stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.